Wailing with bestial voices, the Sardaukar soldiers rushed forward, a tidal wave of uniforms in no formation whatsoever. Pell-mell and primitive, they were still effective and deadly. The Atreides' ranks began to buckle under the onslaught, but Duncan yelled at the top of his lungs. He raised the old Duke's sword to rally them. The blade felt powerful, infused with the spirit of its original owner. He had used it on Ginaz, and today it would lead the Atreides' forces to victory. Had Paulus Atreides lived, the old Duke would have been proud to see the achievements of the scamp he'd taken under his wing. Hearing the swordmaster's strong voice, Leto's men pushed forward with a clash of humming shields and a clatter of blades. Given the overwhelming Atreides' numbers, it should have been a wholesale rout. But the wild-eyed Sardaukar did not give up ground easily. Their faces were flushed, as if the men had been pumped up with intense stimulants. They refused to surrender. As the furious assault progressed, Duncan saw no sign of imminent victory, no hope that this would end soon. Somehow, despite their disorganization, the Sardaukar rallied yet again. He knew that this would be the bloodiest day in his life. While the fighting raged in the underground caverns, Hydar Phenagitica stormed toward the high-security research pavilion, hoping it would serve as a sanctuary. Running beside him, Hasimir Fenring debated whether this might be his opportunity to find a hidden exit and escape. He decided he had no choice but to follow along and let the Tleilaxu researcher destroy himself, as the crazed little man seemed intent on doing. Inside the vast laboratory, shielded from the eyes of outsiders, Fenring wrinkled his nose at the decayed human stench that bubbled up from rows of axolotl tanks. Hundreds of Tleilaxu workers moved about, monitoring tanks, taking samples, adjusting metabolic control mechanisms. The ongoing battle outside frightened them, but they attended to their duties with unwavering dedication, fearing for their lives if they faltered even for an instant. The slightest fluctuation, the simplest misstep, could throw all the delicate tanks out of the range of acceptable parameters and ruin the vital Amal program. Agitica had his priorities. The Sardaukar troop stationed closest to the research pavilion had been given more Agitimol and been pulled from their usual duties. Now they rushed, helter-skelter, into the fray outside the lab complex, screaming wildly. Fenring did not fully understand or like what he saw. No one seemed to be leading the troops at all. His gaze darting around, Agitica gestured to the Count. "Come with me." The little man's eyes were now a startling shade of scarlet, their whites having turned bright red as seeping hemorrhages blossomed in his sclera. "You are the Emperor's man and should be at my right hand when I make announcements regarding our future." He gave a predatory grin, and blood trickled from his gums, as if he had just feasted on raw flesh. "Soon you will worship me."
First let me hear what you have to say," Fenring answered carefully, recognizing the dark glint of insanity in the researcher's demeanor. He considered breaking the gnomish man's neck right then. It would take only a swift, simple blow. But too many loyal laboratory workers were nearby, staring at them, waiting for news.
The two of them climbed a steep metal stairway to a high catwalk over the crowded laboratory floor.
"Hear me! This is a test from God!" Agitica cried to the listeners below, his voice booming into the open space.
Blood sprayed from his mouth as he spoke.
"I have been given a marvelous opportunity to show you our future."
The researchers gathered on the floor, listening to him. Fenring had heard the little man's delusional pronouncements before, but now Agitica seemed to have gone completely mad. A huge comm screen on one wall showed a steady stream of battle images from holoprojectors mounted around the subterranean world. Atreides' forces, allied with the rabble of Ix, were taking control of sector after sector. Oblivious to the tide of combat, the frenzied master researcher held up both hands, clenched into fists.
blood dribbled between his spidery fingers and small knuckles, and ran in scarlet streams down along the tendons of his forearms. He opened his hands to reveal the bright flowers of blood that had blossomed in the center of his palms.
"Are those supposed to be stigmata?" Fenring thought. "An interesting bit of showmanship. But is it real?"
"I created Ajidamal, the secret substance that will open the way for the faithful. I have dispatched face dancers to unexplored corners of the galaxy to lay the foundations of our magnificent future. Other Tleilaxu masters are even now at the Imperial Court on Kaitain, ready to make their move. Those who follow me will be immortal and all-powerful, blessed for eternity."
Fenring reacted with surprise to that information. Blood spilled from an open wound that appeared in the center of Ajitika's forehead, running down across his brows to his temples. Even his eyes wept thick crimson.
"Heed me!"
By now Ajitika's words had built into a shriek.
"Only I have the true vision. Only I understand God's wishes. Only I..."
And as he yelled, a gout of blood erupted from his throat. His frantic gestures degenerated into a seizure, and his body flopped down onto the catwalk. His skin, pores, and breath reeked of cinnamon and rot. Appalled, Fenring backed away, studying the master researcher, watching his death throes. The little man's gray-skinned body was wet and red, with more bleeding from his nostrils and ears. Fenring frowned. Unquestionably, the long-standing expensive project was a miserable failure. Even the Sardaukar, regularly dosed with synthetic melange, had been changed, and not for the better. The Emperor could no longer risk continuing this program. Fenring stared with disbelief at the comm screen. Atreides' military forces were crushing Tleilaxu defenses and berserk Sardaukar regiments, and Fenring found himself watching every aspect of his long-term plan fall apart. The only way to salvage his future would be to make certain that all blame fell squarely upon Master Researcher Haidar Fen Ajitika. Leaking blood from 100 wounds, the little man continued to writhe on the catwalk, screaming grand pronouncements and curses, until he rolled and thrashed to the edge. Finally, Ajitika plummeted off and smashed into an axolotl tank below, with only the slightest nudge of assistance from Count Fenring. Everyone is a potential enemy. Every place, a potential battlefield. Zen Sunni Wisdom. Another labor spasm hit. The contractions grew more painful, tighter, stronger. It took all of Jessica's Bene Gesserit training to control her body, to focus her muscles, and guide the baby through the birth canal. She didn't care about Mohiam's disappointment now, or how this unexpected boy-child would throw the sisterhood's centuries-long breeding program into chaos. She could think only of the process of giving birth. At the side of Jessica's bed, Lady Anirul Corino sat in a suspenser chair. Her face was gray and drawn, as if she were using all her mental abilities to maintain her focus and hold the gossamer strands of her sanity. In one hand, she gripped the surgical las knife again, ready, watching, like a predator. Jessica surrounded herself in a meditative cocoon. She held her secret tight for just a few moments more. The baby would come soon. A son, not a daughter. Both Reverend Mother Mohiam and Lady Margaret Fenring had remained during the hours of her labor, and now they stood attentively just behind Anirul, ready to lunge if she threatened violence. Even though she was the Kwisatz mother, they would not allow her to harm Jessica's baby. Out of the corner of her eye, between deep breaths, Jessica noticed a flicker of Mohiam's hand, a special signal meant for her. Tell Anirul you want me to cut the umbilical cord. Let me be the one to hold the last knife. Jessica pretended a quick spasm to give herself time to consider this. For years, Proctor Superior Mohiam had been her instructor on Wallach 9. Mohiam had indoctrinated her young student in the sisterhood, had given Jessica explicit orders to conceive a daughter by Leto Atreides. She remembered Mohiam holding the gum Jabbar at her neck, the poisoned needle ready for a swift and deadly prick, the penalty for failure. She would have killed me then, if I had not met the sisterhood's esoteric standard of humanity. She could just as easily kill me now. But was that in itself a human thing for Mohiam to do? The Bene Gesserit zealously prohibited the emotion of love. But wasn't it human to feel love and compassion? In the present situation, would Mohiam be any less dangerous than Anirul? No, it is more likely they will kill my baby. It seemed to Jessica that love was something a machine could not experience, and humans had defeated thinking machines in the Butlerian Jihad millennia ago. But if humans were the victors, why did this remnant of non-humanity, the savagery of the Gom Jabbar, thrive in one of the great schools? Savagery was as much a part of the human psyche as love. One could not exist without the other. Must I trust her? The alternative is too terrifying. Is there any other way? Between pushes, Jessica lifted her sweaty head from her pillow and said in a soft voice, Lady Anirul, I would like Margaret Fenring to cut the baby's umbilical cord. Mohiam recoiled in surprise. Would you hand the last knife to her, please? Jessica pretended not to notice her old mentor's agitation and displeasure. It is my choice. Anirul appeared distracted, as if she had been listening to the internal voices, still trying to understand them. She looked down at the surgical tool clutched in her hands. Yes, of course. Glancing over her shoulder, she handed the potential weapon to Lady Fenring. The anguish in Anirul's face subsided for a moment. How far along? She leaned close to the birthing bed. Jessica attempted to adjust her body chemistry to quell a sharp bolt of pain, but it had no effect. The baby is coming. Instead of looking at the observers in the room, she detached herself and studied several tame honeybees that moved between the floating planter globes over her head. The insects crawled inside the enclosures and pollinated the flowers. Focus. Focus. After several moments, the spasm subsided. When her vision cleared, she saw to her surprise that Mohiam now held the surgical las knife after all. She felt a moment of terror for her baby. The weapon itself was irrelevant, though. They are Bene Gesserit. They need no cutting instrument to kill a helpless child. The labor pains came closer together. Fingers touched her, slid inside her vagina. The plump medical sister nodded. She is fully dilated. And with a touch of voice, push. Reflectively, Jessica responded, but the effort only intensified the pain. She cried out. Her muscles clenched. Concerned voices moved into the background, and she had trouble comprehending their words. Keep pushing. Now it was the second medical sister. Something inside fought against Jessica, as if the baby himself was taking control, refusing to come out. How could this be possible? Didn't it defy the natural way of things? Stop. Now relax. She couldn't identify the source of the command, but obeyed. The pain became excruciating, and she suppressed a scream, using every skill Mohiam had taught her. Her body responded with biological programming as deep as her DNA. The baby is strangling on its cord.
No, please, no.
Jessica kept her eyes closed, focused inward, trying to guide her precious child to safety. Leto must have his son. But she couldn't envision the right muscles, couldn't feel any changes. She perceived only darkness and an intense, overwhelming gloom. She felt the soft hand of a medical sister reach inside her, poking and probing to untangle the baby. She tried to control her body, to work her muscles, to direct her mind down into each cell. Again, Jessica had the peculiar sensation that the tiny child was resisting, that he didn't want to be born. At least, not here, not in the presence of these dangerous women. Jessica felt small and weak. The love she had wanted to share with her Duke and their son seemed so insignificant in comparison with the boundless universe and all it encompassed. The Kwisatz Haderach. Would he be able to see everything even before his own birth? Is my child the one? Push again. Push! Jessica did so, and this time felt a change, a smooth flow. She clenched her entire body, straining as long as she could, and then pushed again and again. The pain subsided, but she reminded herself of the peril all around her. The baby came out. She felt him go, sensed hands reaching out, taking him away. And then all of her strength faded for a moment. Must recover quickly. Need to protect him. After three deep breaths, Jessica struggled to sit. She felt weak, deeply fatigued, sore everywhere. The women gathered at the foot of her birthing bed said nothing, hardly moved. A hush had fallen over the sunlit room, as if she had given birth to a monstrous deformity. "My baby," Jessica said, cutting the ominous silence. "Where is my baby?"
"How can this be?"
Anirul's voice was high-pitched, on the ragged edge of hysteria. She let out a keening cry.
"No!"
"What have you done?" Mohiam said.
"Jessica, what have you done?"
The Reverend Mother did not show the anger Jessica had feared so greatly. Instead, her expression showed defeat and utter disappointment. Again, Jessica struggled to get a glimpse of her child, and this time she saw wet, black hair, a small forehead, and wide-open, intelligent eyes. She thought of her beloved Duke Leto.
"My baby must live."
"Now I understand the disturbance in other memory." Anirul's face became a mask of unbridled rage as she glared at Jessica.
"They knew, but Lobia couldn't tell me in time. I am the Kwisatz mother. Thousands of sisters have worked on our program for millennia. Why did you do this to our future?"
"Don't kill him. Punish me for what I did if you must, but not Leto's son."
Tears streamed down her cheeks. Mohiam placed the baby in Jessica's arms, as if ridding herself of an unpleasant burden. "Take your damned son," she said, in the coldest of tones, "and pray that the sisterhood survives what you have done." Humanity knows its own mortality and fears the stagnation of its heredity. But it does not know what course to take for salvation. This is the primary purpose of the Kwisatz Haderach breeding program, to change the direction of humankind in an unprecedented manner. Lady Anirul Corino, Her Private Journals. Just outside the Imperial birthing room, the man disguised as a Sardaukar guard wore expertly applied makeup to conceal his sappho-stained lips. At the back of the thin man's crease, visible at all. With heightened speed and senses, Peter DeVries had slipped a knife beneath the real guard's coat into his left kidney as the man walked to his post. Then he had moved quickly to salvage the uniform. He took pride in his work. Within only a few minutes, DeVries had dragged the dead man into an empty room, donned the gray and black uniform, and rapidly applied smears of enzyme chemicals to eliminate bloodstains. He composed himself, then assumed his station outside the birthing room. The dead guard's companion looked at him skeptically.
"Where's Dankers?"
"Who can say? I got pulled from lion-tending duty to stand here while some lady-in-waiting has a brat," DeVries said, his voice gruff with disgust. "I was told to come here and replace him." Grunting, as if he didn't care, the other guard checked his ceremonial dagger and adjusted the strap of a neurostun baton on his shoulder. DeVries had another blade sheathed beneath his jacket sleeve. He also felt the sticky wetness of the bloody shirt against his back, and rather liked the sensation. They heard a sudden outcry, surprised and anguished voices inside the birthing room. Then a bawling baby. DeVries and the guard looked at each other, and the Mentat's sense of danger heightened. Perhaps the pretty mother, the Baron's secret daughter, had died in childbirth. Oh, but that would be too much to hope for. Too simple. Now he heard only low tones of conversation, and the continuing cry of the baby. Duke Leto's infant offered so many possibilities. The Baron's own secret grandchild. Maybe DeVries could take the baby hostage, use it to make the beautiful Jessica submit to him as a love slave, and then kill them both before he tired of her. He could toy with the Duke's woman for a while. Or the child itself might be even more valuable than Jessica. The newborn was both Atreides and Harkonnen. Perhaps the safest course of action would be to remove the brat to Gedi Prime, to be raised beside Fade Rautha. What a fabulous revenge against House Atreides that would be! An alternative Harkonnen heir, if Fade turned out to be as much of a clod as his older brother Rabban. Depending upon how he played out the situation, DeVries might gain leverage against the sisterhood, against two great houses, and against Jessica herself. All in a day's work. He salivated, considering the delicious possibilities. The women's voices grew louder, and the birthing room door slid open smoothly. With a rustle of clothing, three witches walked into the corridor. The foul Mohiam, the Emperor's unsteady wife, and Margaret Fenring. All of them dressed in black Abba robes and preoccupied with a hushed, muttered argument. DeVries held his breath. If Mohiam looked in his direction, she might recognize him, in spite of the makeup and stolen uniform. Fortunately, the women were too upset about something to notice anything as they hurried down the corridor, leaving the mother and child unprotected. After the witches rounded a corner, DeVries said gruffly to his companion, "Should check inside to make sure everything's all right." Before the guard could decide upon a response, the Mentat slithered into the birthing room. The loud cries of a baby came from the bright area ahead, and more female voices. He heard the guard hurrying to join him, boots clicking on the floor. The door closed behind them. With a swift, silent movement, DeVries spun and cut the Sardaukar's throat before the man could utter a sound. The vicious slash of the knife made a whistling sound in the air and spattered gouts of red on the wall. After easing the uniformed body down to the floor, the Mentat prowled deeper into the delivery room. He touched the neurostun baton against his wrist, activating the field. At a wall-mounted workstation, he saw two short medical sisters tending a baby, taking cellular and hair samples and studying the screen of a diagnostic machine. Their backs were to him. The taller woman scowled down at the baby, as if it were an experiment gone wrong. Hearing a buzzing sound, the shorter, heavier woman started to turn. But DeVries leaped forward and swung the stun baton like a bat. It caught her in the face, smashing her nose and sending crackling impulses through her brain. Before she hit the floor, her companion stepped in front of the baby and raised her arms in a defensive posture. DeVries struck with the stun baton. She blocked the blows, only to find both of her arms paralyzed. His blow to her neck was so hard that he heard her vertebrae shatter. Panting, exhilarated, he stabbed both motionless forms, just to make sure. No point in taking chances. The baby boy lay on the table, kicking and crying. Nicely vulnerable. On the other side of the birthing room, he saw Jessica lying on a wide bed, exhausted from the delivery, her eyes bleary with analgesics. Even haggard and sweat-streaked, she looked beautiful and fascinating. He thought about killing her so that Duke Leto could no longer have her. Only seconds had passed, but he could spare no more time. When he reached for the baby, Jessica's eyes widened with shock. Her expression changed to one of misery and anguish. "Oh, this is much better than killing her." She reached out, struggling to sit. She was going to crawl off the bed and come after him. Such devotion. Such maternal distress. He smiled at her. But through his makeup and disguise, he never deciding to be steady all through the oration. He knew from the applause that the majority of the Landsrat genuinely admired his actions. His deeds might well become legendary among the nobles. Politics, however, had a way of taking strange twists and turns. The gains of one moment could be lost in the next. Many delegates might have applauded only because they'd been caught up in the moment. They could still reconsider. Even so, Leto had made new allies today. It only remained to determine the extent of his gains. Now, though, it was time to see Jessica. At a rapid pace, he crossed the flagstone-paved ellipse. Once inside the palace, he bypassed the grand staircase and instead caught a lift tube to the birthing room. Perhaps his child was already born. But, as he stepped out on the top floor, four Sardaukar guards blocked his path with weapons drawn. An alarmed crowd milled in the corridor behind them, including a number of black-robed Bene Gesserits. He saw Jessica slumped in a chair, wrapped in an oversized white robe. The sight of her, so weak, so drained, shocked him. Her skin was damp with sweat, translucent with pain. "I am Duke Leto Atreides, the Emperor's cousin. The Lady Jessica is my bound concubine. Let me through." He thrust his way past, employing moves Duncan Idaho had taught him to knock aside threatening blades. When Jessica saw him, she pushed aside the clinging arms of her Bene Gesserit sisters and tried to stand.
"Leto!"
He caught her and embraced her, afraid to ask about the baby. Had it been stillborn? If so, what was Jessica doing here outside the birthing room? And why all the security? Reverend Mother Mohiam stepped close, her face a mask of anger and distress. Jessica tried to say something, but broke down in tears. He noticed blood on the floor under her. Leto's words were cold, but he had to voice the question. "My child has died." "You have a son, Duke Leto, a healthy child," Mohiam said curtly. "But he has been kidnapped. Two guards and two medical sisters are dead. Whoever took the boy wanted him very badly." Leto could not absorb the terrible news all at once. He managed only to hold Jessica more tightly. For long lifetimes, marked by the hulks of ruined planets, man was a geological and ecological force without knowing it, with little awareness of his own strength.
Hardat Kynes, The Long Road to Seleucia Secundus. The stranglehold of highliners over Arrakis tightened until Baron Harkonnen felt unable to breathe. All afternoon, Sardaukar warcraft continued to stream from the underbellies of the Guild transport ships. He had never been so afraid. The Baron knew, intellectually, that Shaddam would never incinerate Arrakis, as he had done to Zanavar. But it was not beyond the realm of possibility for the Emperor to obliterate Carthag, and him with it. Perhaps I should leave in one of my ships. Quickly. But no more shuttles could take off. All spacecraft had been grounded. The Baron had no way to escape, except on foot, into the desert. And he wasn't quite that desperate. Not yet. Standing inside the Plaz observation bubble of the Carthag spaceport, he watched an orange contrail against the darkening sky, the descent of a shuttle from one of the highliners. On short notice, he had been instructed to come and meet it. The unprecedented situation rankled him. That damnable Shaddam loved to play soldier, strutting around in his uniform. And now he was behaving like the biggest bully in the universe. The Baron's orbital observation satellites had already been destroyed in an offhand action. What in all the hells does the Emperor want of me? Standing in the bleak light of dusk, the Baron scowled. By sending out runners, he had mustered a meager company of troops onto the demarcated receiving area of the spaceport. The day's residual heat rippled from the fused silica pavement, evaporating chemicals and oils that impregnated the field. Around him, the embargoed vessels sat with their systems shut down. On the horizon, where the colors of sunset blazed like a distant fire over the sandy edge of the world, he could see a blur of dust. Another one of those cursed sandstorms. The small shuttle landed. Preparing to meet it, the Baron felt like a trussed animal. The additional troops he had brought from Gedi Prime could never deal with an invasion on this scale. If only he had more time, he might summon Peter de Vries from Kytane to act as his emissary, to negotiate a diplomatic end to what surely must be a simple misunderstanding. Floating forward on suspensors to greet the Choam and Guild entourage, he forced a smile onto his jowly face. An albino Guild legate stepped down from the elaborate shuttlecraft, wearing a spice infuser suit. Close behind him came the weathered Supreme Bashar and an ominous-looking Choam Mentat auditor. The Baron flicked his spider-black eyes toward the Mentat and knew this man would be a real problem. "Welcome! Welcome!" He could barely keep the unsettled look of dismay from his face. A careful observer would certainly notice his nervousness. "I will, of course, cooperate in every possible way." "Yes," announced the albino Guild legate, inhaling deeply of diffused spice gas that seeped from his thick collar. "You will cooperate in every way." The trio wore arrogance like second skins. "But you must first explain to me the infraction you believe I have committed. Who has falsely accused me? I assure you there has been some sort of error." The Mentat auditor came close, with the Supreme Bashar at his side. "You will grant us access to all financial and shipping records. We intend to inspect every spice harvester, legal storehouse, and production manifest. We shall ascertain if there has been an error." The Guild legate followed close behind. "Don't try to hide anything." Swallowing hard, the Baron guided them out of the spaceport. "Of course." He knew that Peter de Vries had carefully doctored his records, combing through every document, every report, and the twisted Mentat was normally very thorough. But the Baron felt cold inside, certain that even the most careful manipulations would not stand up to the close scrutiny of these demonic auditors. With a pained smile, he gestured them onto a transport platform that would carry them to the Harkonnen residency.
May I offer refreshments?
Perhaps I can find a way to slip poison or mind-fogging drugs into their drinks.
The Supreme Bashar gave a deprecating smile.
I think not, Baron. We heard about your social prowess at the gala banquet on Gedi Prime. We can't allow imperial business to be delayed for such pleasantries. Unable to think of any further excuses, the Baron led them into Carthag.
Out in the desert, Leet Kynes and Stilgar had watched the Highliners arrive, ship after ship appearing out of fold space in the night sky. The vessels created an ionization cloud in the air that drowned out most of the stars. Leet knew, however, that this was a storm generated by politics, not an awesome natural phenomenon. Great forces move beyond us still. Stilgar sipped the last drops of pungent spice coffee that Ferula had brought to the men, where they sat on the rocks below Redwall Siege.
Indeed, Leet, we must learn more about it.
By tradition, Ferula had prepared the strong drink for them at the end of the hot day, before hurrying her young son Leet Chi into the Siege communal play areas. Baby Chani still spent the days with a nursemaid. Within hours, Fremen housekeepers and servants who lurked in the Harkonnen residency began to send distrans reports, organically encoded messages implanted on the sonic patterns of homing bats. With each piece of the puzzle, the news grew more interesting. Leet was delighted to learn that Baron Harkonnen himself had his head on the chopping block. Details were sparse, and tensions ran high. Apparently, the Spacing Guild, Choam, and the Emperor Sardaukar had come to investigate certain irregularities in spice production.
So, the guildsman Aelric listened to my words. Let the Harkonnens stew.
Now, standing in one of the Siege communal rooms, Leet scratched his sandy beard where the stillsuit catch tube had made an indentation. The Harkonnens have been unable to hide the effects of our raids, or of the secret we leaked. Our small revenge has caused larger repercussions than we had hoped.
Stilgar checked the kris knife in its sheath at his waist. Using this event as a fulcrum, we might just succeed in ejecting the Harkonnens from our desert.
Shaking his head, Leet responded. That would not free us from imperial control. If the Baron is ousted, the Dune fief would simply be transferred to another Landsrad family. Shaddam thinks it is his right to do so, though the Fremen have lived and suffered here for hundreds of generations. Our new lords might not be better than Harkonnens.
Stilgar's hawkish face tightened.
But they could not be worse.
Agreed, my friend.
And here is my idea. We have destroyed or taken some of the Baron's spice hoards. Those actions were costly annoyances to him. But now we have the opportunity to strike an embarrassing blow while the Choam auditors are present. It will be the Harkonnens' downfall.
I will do whatever you ask, Leet.
The young planetologist reached out to touch the other man's muscular arm.
Still, I know you dislike the towns, and Carthag most of all. But the Harkonnens have established another hidden storehouse of melange there, right in the shadow of the spaceport. If we were to target that hoard, set fire to the warehouse where it is stored, the Guild and Choam could not help but see. The Baron will be mortified.
Stilgar's blue-within-blue eyes widened.
Such challenges are always enjoyable, Leet. It will be dangerous, but my commandos are most pleased not only to hurt our enemies, but to humiliate them.
As the Mentat auditor stared at shipping records, he did not blink, did not move his head. He simply absorbed the data and documented discrepancies on a separate scribing pad. The list of errors grew longer with each hour, and the Baron became more and more concerned. So far, however, all of the mistakes they had discovered were relatively minor.
enough to earn him a few penalties, but certainly not enough to warrant his summary execution. The Mentat auditor had not yet found what he was looking for. The explosion in the warehouse district took them all by surprise. Leaving the auditor at a table full of documents, the Baron raced to the balcony. Response teams rushed across the streets. Flames and dust rose in a pillar of brownish-orange smoke. Without moving to get a better look, the Baron realized exactly which of the nondescript ramshackle warehouses had been the target. And he cursed silently. The Mentat auditor stood beside him on the balcony, observing with intent eyes. On his other side, Supreme Bashar Garon squared his shoulders and bristled.
"What is in that building, Baron?"
"I believe it is just one of my industrial warehouses," he lied. "A place where we store leftover construction materials, components for prefabricated dwellings shipped from Gedi Prime. Damnable hells, how much spice was inside there!"
"Indeed," the Mentat auditor said.
"And is there a reason why the warehouse might have exploded?"
"A buildup of volatile chemicals, or a careless worker, I would imagine."
"It's those cursed Fremen." He didn't have to fabricate a confused expression.
"We will inspect the area thoroughly," Zoom Garon announced. "My Sardaukar will assist your relief efforts."
The Baron quailed, but with no legitimate excuse he could not argue. Those desert scum had blown up one of his melange hordes, and the debris would be evidence to be used against him by this Mentat auditor and Choam. They would easily prove that the warehouse had been full of spice, and that House Harkonnen had kept no records of such a stockpile. He was doomed. He raged inside, infuriated that the Fremen would choose to strike here and now, at a time when he would not be able to gloss over the event. He would be caught red-handed, with no defense and no excuse.